We are holding on Tzadik Zion on the days about. So we're holding on Tzadik Zion on the days about 10 lines from the 11 lines from the bottom by the two dots.
Okay.
We talked yesterday. The last thing we talked yesterday was about a case. The last thing we talked yesterday about was a case where a person threw something from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, and in the course of that, it traveled four amos in Rishus HaRabim. So we said Rabbi Yehuda makes him chayev and the Chachamim make him potter, and we discussed, does that mean Rabbi Yehuda makes him chayev two chatois, one for transferring from Rishus to Rishus, and the other one for four amos in Rishus HaRabim, and the Chachamim would say only one, and it would be a matter of whether we say klutta kamisha huncha, that once it entered the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, it would be considered as if it landed. That was one way we understood it. And then the other way we understood it was we said that no, Rabbi Yehuda would say he's chayev. Only one chatas and the Chachamim would make him completely potter because it didn't land where he wanted to, so therefore his machshava didn't get accomplished. So now more on that topic, the Gemara says. Shita. Now it's obvious to start with as follows. Niskaven Rizruk Shmoyna Mazorak Arba. If a person intended to throw something 8 amos in Rishus HaRabim, and instead he only threw 4 amos, well then, of course, he's going to be chayev. Had a cost of shame in Shimon. This is the equivalent of meaning to write the entire name Shimon, and in the end, he only wrote two letters, Shin Mem, which we're going to learn in the next paragraph that he's still chayev. You're chayev for writing two letters on Shabbos, even though in this case he intended to write more. The two letters, especially the two letters by themselves, form a full word of its own, because the word shame itself is a word or a name. So therefore, you can say the fact that he didn't do all of them, all of what he wanted to, doesn't matter. He did a significant amount that constitutes a malacha. We'll learn about that topic next week. So therefore, the same thing in this case. He meant to throw it at least 4 amas. There's no question that he'd be chayev because, after all, he did throw it 4 amas, even though he intended to throw it further. What about, though, the question is, Gavin Luzer Kaibra, what happens, though, if the other way around? He intended to throw 4 amos, and in the end, he actually threw 8 amos. So, do we say on the one hand, look, I mean, he took it outside of 4 amos, so therefore, obviously, he has to be chayev. Or maybe not. Maybe, after all, he wanted it to land in a certain place. He wanted it to go 8. He wanted it to go 4 amos. Instead, it overshot that, and it went beyond that. It went 8 amos. So therefore, maybe he should be potter. Like we were saying yesterday, it's not considered malachas machshavas. Remember, the fact that it traveled over the 4 amma mark means, in other words, he intended it to land at the end of the 4 amma mark, and instead it didn't land. It continued going through there. If we say kol tzeh kamisha huncha, fine, you can make him chayev, but if not, then not. So the Gemara says, so what's the problem? Isn't that the same case as Ravina asked Rav Ashi? Namely, we had in the Gemara yesterday, if we were assuming that Rabbi Yehuda wants to be mechayev the guy two chatois, one for taking from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, and the other one because it was going from one Rishus HaYochid to he was throwing from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, and it passed 4 amos in Rishus HaRabim, and we said we learned one way of learning Rabbi Yehuda's statement is that he's mechayev for two chatois. We ended up saying not, because we said Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold that you have a chatas for a tolda and an av when they're done by halam echad, and here that's what it is, because one of them is an av and one of them is a tolda. Fine. The point is, though, that at least in the Hava Amina, at least in Shmuel's explanation, we were saying that that's what it is. Rabbi Yehuda is, in fact, mechayev him for both of them. And so on that, we said that Ravina asked Rav Ashi, in that case, then, how can he be chayev if he didn't land where he wanted to? And Rav Ashi answered him, and Rav Ashi answers him that you have to be talking about the case is where he said, in fact, I don't care where it lands, as long as it lands somewhere in that Rishus. So that's what makes them chayev. So the same thing over here. If he says kol makom shetir tetanuach, fine, sure, you can be mechayev him for the fact that it went 8 amos instead of the 4 that he intended. But obviously, we're not talking about that because he wanted it to go davka 4 amos. He wanted to throw it davka to something that was to a spot that was 4 amos away, and instead, like this, it went 8 amos. So why should he be chayev? In fact, the question is actually on both of them. In fact, Rashi says in both cases he should be potter. You started by saying that if pshita, that if he meant to throw 8 and he threw 4, then for sure it should be writing like writing shame from Shimon, and he should be potter, and he should be chayev, but not necessarily because over here it's different. Because the fact is his machshava didn't get accomplished. Now you're saying, okay, but he wrote the letter of shame from Shimon. Shouldn't that be enough to be mechayev him? The fact that he intended it to go, the fact that he threw 4 amos, even though he intended to go 8, the difference is midrami. How can you compare them? Hosam, in that case, kamadalektiv shame. In that case, without writing the letters shimim lo mikhtiv le shimon, you're not going to be able to write the word shimon. The word when you write the word shimon consists of 5 letters. Necessarily, at some point, you have to have written 2 letters. What over here, if he doesn't throw it 4 amos, is he not going to be throwing it 8 amos? They're 2 different things. One lands at the end of 4 amos, and the other one lands at the end of 8 amos. Yeah, when you're throwing it 8 amos, of course, it means that it has to travel over the 4 amma point. Okay, just because it traveled over that point doesn't mean that it landed there. So therefore, they're 2 different things. One is a throw of 8 amos, and one is a throw of 4 amos. And therefore, it comes out according to that way of looking at it. He shouldn't according to that, it would mean that he would actually be potter in both cases. It actually be potter in both cases because in neither case is avida machshavke. In neither case did his machshava get accomplished. In the one case it went too close. In the other case it went too far. So first of all, Rishonim talk about that. It might be different if he misjudged the distance. If the spot where he intended to throw it, he thought was. We had a case like that on Daf Ayin Gimel. If he thought that the spot, if we had a case over there where he intended to throw 2 amos and threw 4 amos, and we had a machlokes at Abaya and Rava, whether he's chayev, so that the Rashba, I think it is, explains that the difference is over there, we're not talking about that he intended to throw 2 versus 4, we're talking about he misjudged the distance. He thought that the spot, he intended to throw it four, but he misjudged and thought that the spot was only 2 amos away. Over here, it's not necessarily the same thing. With that said, though, the Rashba also points out, and the Rambam also learns this way. Apparently, they have a different understanding or a different girsa in our Gemara over here. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. You'll still hear me, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm having trouble connecting in Yaakov. All right. Okay, I guess I'll try that. Okay, so... The Rambam has a different understanding over here, and so do some other Rishonim, that actually if you intended to throw four you would in fact be chayim even according to the maskana, because when you're throwing 8 amos, it means it has to pass over the 4 amma point. So you're fine. We don't say kol tikmi shehuncha, but in that sense, in other words, yes, it is. The 4 amos is included in 8 amos in effect in the same way as Shimon is, as shame is included in Shimon. When you throw it 8 amos, you knew it was going to pass over the 4 amma mark because it has to. So they learned the Gemara that way, that in fact he would be chayav in that case, but in the other way around, we intended to throw 4 and 2 8, then he'd be potter because then lo yisabid amach shatzer. Okay. Turn it up on. Hazardus mishus harabim mishus harabim mishus yachid b'amta. Same case as we talked about yesterday, where a person is throwing from one Rosh Hashanah Adam to another one, and there's a Rosh Hashanah Yachid in the middle. So Dalet Amos Chayev, if it went through Dalet Amos of Rosh Hashanah Adam, even if that Dalet Amos is made of part of one Rosh Hashanah Adam and part of the other. So he stood 2 amos away from the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, threw it. It went 2 amos in Rosh Hashanah Adam, then it went through the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, then it went 2 or more amos in Rosh Hashanah Adam again. So then he'd be chayev because after all it went a total of 4 amos. It was combined together with 2 amos in one and 2 amos in the other. Doesn't matter. Pachas may have amos potter, but if altogether the total length of travel was less than 4 amos. Then if the total length of travel was less than 4 amos, even between the 2 Rosh Hashanah Adam, then he'd be potter. So the Gemara says, "My Tamash Malan." Okay, what is the chiddush that this Braita is telling us? We know that you have to do 4 amos in Rosh Hashanah Adam to be chayev. The answer is Hakamash Malan Rishrius Mitzdarpet. There are 2 things. Number one, we see from this Braita that the 2 Rosh Hashanah Adam do combine together. Which means, as Rashi says, now we learned previously. Put yourself on mute, please, if you don't mind. We learned previously on Daf Kei that Rabbi Yossi said, we had a case over there where a person carries out, let's say, half of Regerus to one Rosh Hashanah Adam. Please put yourself on mute again. Somebody has a lot of background noise there. Thank you. So we had a case over there where a person carries half of Regerus of food to one Rosh Hashanah Adam and another half to a different Rosh Hashanah Adam. So let's say they started out in one half, again, he started out in this house in the middle of Rosh Hashanah Adam and then carried half of it in one direction and half in the other direction. So we said Rabbi Yossi would make him potter because it's 2 different Rishuyas. So Rashi says all Braita is disagreeing with Rabbi Yossi and saying that the 2 Rishuyas can combine. That's number one. And number two, the lawyer I'm reading, Kluta Kamisha Huncha, number two, we do not say Kluta Kamisha Huncha because if we did, then it doesn't matter that it was less than 4 amos. The fact is, you'd still have it would be considered as if it landed in Rosh Hashanah Yachid and then took off from Rosh Hashanah Yachid to Rosh Hashanah Adam, and maybe you don't need 4 amos. So the fact that we're saying he's potter implies that it's not klutah. A number of Rishonim have questions on what Rashi says in that. Number one, they say it's not necessarily addressing the same issue as Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim earlier involving the half regeris, because there it was 2 different acts of Aitah. Here it's one throw. So not necessarily is it saying that it would go against Rabbi Yossi over there. Maybe Rabbi Yossi would say over there he's potter because there was actually 2 different acts of Aitah. He picked up a half of regeris and took it out one door, and then he picked up the other half of regeris and took it out the other door. Whereas over here it's one throw, which is going across part of one Rosh Hashanah Adam and part of the other. Second of all, they also say that why are you saying that only from the end, Pachas Me'aba Amos, you see we don't say Klutha Kamisha Huncha, you see it already in the Reisha, because if you said Klutha Kamisha Huncha, then you would say that even if it went total of 4 amos, so what? We could consider it though it landed in Rosh Hashanah Yachid and then took off again, and you don't have a full transfer of 4 amos. So in fact, a number of the Rishonim learn that way, that that's what it means, that we don't say Kulka Kamisha Huncha, that in that connection we don't consider as though it landed in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid to break up the 4 amos. So that's why, if it went total of 4 amos, even though part of it was in one Rosh Hashanah Adam and part of it was in the other, he's still going to be chayev because we don't say Kulka Kamisha Huncha, we don't say as if it landed in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid in the middle. If we were to take Kulta Kamisha Huncha, he'd be chayev whether it was 4 amos or not, because then he transferred from Rosh Hashanah Adam to Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and again from Rosh Hashanah Yachid to Rosh Hashanah Adam. The fact that the Reisha is saying he's chayev only if it went 4 amos in Rosh Hashanah Adam implies that we don't take Kulta Kamisha Huncha.
How could it not go 4 amos in Rosh Hashanah Adam?
Because let's say he was standing 1 amma away from the house. He threw it. It went one amah in Rosh Hashanah through the house, and one amah in the other Rosh Hashanah, and it landed on the ground. So it only went total of two amahs in Rosh Hashanah.
It went. Oh, went from the Rosh Hashanah
through
the house.
Not over through the house.
Through the house.
Through the house. We said yesterday, Rebbe was
the other side of the house.
Right, and then it landed in the other Rosh Hashanah. Exactly. If the, so that's the point. So Rishonim, so the other
Rishonim. It was about 3 tefachim.
It was about 3 tefachim, yeah, because of, right. Yeah, it was within 10 tefachim, let's say, or if we say a commentary about Kiva Yofin and Zodok Mimoshit, then it could be above 10, yeah. But the point is, in other words, that we're talking about whether we have a total of 4 amas over there. So again, Rashi is saying that the fact that we say we don't say Kulta Kamisha Huncha, we learn from the Sefer that therefore if you went less than 4 amas, he's Potter. And we don't consider it that he went from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah and from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. The other Rishonim learn that we learn it from the Reisha, that since we're saying total of 4 amas is chayev, we don't say klutah kamishoncha, and that breaks up the 4 amas. We wouldn't say that, and then we still ignore that, and we say it's as if it was a complete 4 amas thing because it was all one throw. Rashi doesn't learn that way, apparently, because he learns that you anyway can't say klutah kamishoncha in order to be meiko on him. In that case, if he said klutah kamishoncha, it would come out of kula. Because it would come out of kula, because then you can't be mechayvim for the 4 amos, then we're not going to do that. Okay. So now we're going to get into the topic of the kroshim of the Mishkan. We said, as you said at the beginning of the parak, that we're learning the dinim of Hatzah and Achnasah from the way, in the Mishnah actually, we said already, that we're learning the dinim of Hatzah and Achnasah from Hatzah in particular, from the way they handled the kroshim of the Mishkan. So now we're going to get into the details of that. So Omer of Shmuel by Yehuda, Omer of Abba, Omer of Huna, Omer of Rav, Hamavid, first of all, Hamavid Dalet Amos B'Rishot Rabim B'Kura, if a person carries something 4 Amos in Rishot Rabim that is roofed over, then Potter. L'fisha ain't a dermal, a digle midbar, because a Rishot Rabim that has a roof over it is not like it was in the camps in the desert, where it was open to the sky. Now, they have the Ananiah covered, granted, but the Ritva says, come on, that doesn't count as a covering for this purpose.
Don't we just take this to mean that a Rishot Rabim cannot have a roof?
Right, pretty much. One of the definitions, exactly. One of when the Rambam, for example, writes down in Hilchos Shabbos the definition of Rosh Hashanah, so he explains, apparently based on our Gemara, that one of the criteria is it shouldn't be roofed over.
Even if it had a cover, it was so high up, because the menorah is very, very high up.
I don't know if that makes a difference. I mean, I don't think the ritual explains why the Ananiah cover should not be considered a cover, but okay. Right. So the question is, Amy, is that so? Consider the wagons that we're saying that they used to transport the Mishkan. They were covered. And what do we mean they were covered? Rashi says the actual wagons themselves were more like frames, as we're going to go through as we go through the Gemara over here. But once they put the boards on them, then the wagons are covered up with the boards that are lying across them. And the Omer Rav Mishum Rav Chia, Agolis Tachtein Uvenein Tzidein Rosh Hashanah. And yet, the same Rav says in the name of Rav Chia that the wagons, the area underneath them, and the area between the wagons, and the area next to the wagons, is all considered Rosh Hashanah. Now, in particular, the question, here you have the boards are covering up the wagon, sticking out on both sides, in fact, Rashi learns, and yet we say that the area underneath them, and then between them and whatever, is Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, the question is why. In particular, Mar Shaw says the question is not maybe so much on the Benehen and Sidehen, because we're going to describe the Kroshim. They had areas of them of the Kroshim that were carved out to make pegs that would go into the Adon. On Omer Beis, by the way, we'll see there's a diagram there of one of the crushings. You can get an idea of what they look like. So fine. So you have spaces over there. So there's less of a question that those spaces should be Rosh Hashanah. But the question really is underneath them. If underneath them is all covered up by the boards, why are they Rosh Hashanah? So you see that a Rosh Hashanah can be covered up.
On the other hand, the wagon is made, it's a thing for itself. It's not really under the made, you know, the bottom is a separate thing. It's not part of the gola.
No, but that's the point. In other words, the area, right, it's covered. So the area, and we're still saying the area underneath the agola. If somebody were to carry over there, he would still be hired for carrying on Shabbos. Why? If it's covered up. The answer is Tika Amar Rav B'Darasa. The answer is Rav would be talking about the space between the rows of boards. As we're going to see, as we go through the Gemara over here, the boards were laid in rows on the wagons, and there were spaces between the rows. There was not between the rows, rather between the columns that stack up the boards one on top of the other. Laying down. The board. You have to hello. I'm going to have to figure out what we can do as far as that, because if we now and then we're getting popular over here, then we're going to have to find some.
That's a big problem.
Sure. All right. Okay. The kushim were as follows. Each keresh was 10 amas long, one amma wide, and one and a half amas wide, and one amma thick. So they obviously didn't transport them standing up, because they wouldn't be stable. If you're going to have a 10-amma thing standing up on top of a wagon as they're moving around, it's going to fall off. So they would lay them down. They would lay them down flat. We're going to see soon in the Gemara the question whether they laid them along their wider side, which is 1.5 amas, or their narrower side, which is 1 amma. We're going to get to that point soon.
1 amma would be at least the length of the table. Though.
An amma is officially the length from a person's elbow to their fingertip, although it depends on the size of the person, of course. And you have
huge.
Yeah, they were quite large.
So it's either to lay down on the wagon this way or that, or sticking up.
So actually, okay, so Rashi explains as follows, based on the Gemara as we go along. What it is like this. The wagons themselves were 5 by 5 amas. As we're going to see soon in the Gemara, they did not have a bottom. They had just like pegs. They had just like boards holding together the bottom. Rashi describes it as the kind of thing that they use for as the kind of thing that they use for carrying wood, as opposed to, let's say, if you have Rashi describes at the bottom of the umud and the top of the next umud. If you have, let's say, a wagon that you're using to transport sand, then of course it has to have a solid bottom, otherwise the sand will fall out. But if you have a wagon that you're using to transport wood, you don't need it to have a solid bottom, because then nothing's going to fall out anyway. So you have bottoms just made out of boards that are a couple of board here, whatever, with spaces between them. So the wagons themselves, again, are so Rashi learns that the wagons themselves are 5 amas. So each board is 10 amas long, meaning that the ends of it stuck out 2.5 amas over each side of the wagon. Shigehen, in particular, Rashi explains, means we're talking about each wagon had wheels. The wheels themselves stick out from each side of the wagon 1.25 amas.
Who pulled the wagon?
Oxen. They had, to remember the Nisim.
So that, right.
Right. Remember the Nisim gave over there, what is it, six wagons and 12
so
oxen.
Like
obviously.
Sides or front and back?
No, they're sticking out on the sides. They're sticking out on the sides.
Over the wheels.
Over the wheels, right.
But yeah, they didn't have to worry about how wide they're going to be in the midbar.
Right. In fact, later on that study test, which we'll learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, we're going to talk about how we learn from the size of things how wide Rosh Hashanah has to be.
Tomorrow this year is at 5.
Tomorrow is at 5:30, Beis Hashem.
Here.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll do that. So anyway, so Rashi explains then again. So you have as follows. So each wagon, you have the body of the wagon itself is 5 amas wide. Then you have the wheels stick out 1.25 amas on each side. So each wagon comes out to be 7.5 amas total, including the wheels. And the kroshim are sticking out on the sides over that. So they hang out. They hang over the wheels, and then 1.25 amas on each side. So that makes 10, and then you have 10 for the other ones. So you have actually a total of 20, which actually we're going to get to when we talk about it tomorrow. So in that case, how is it that Rosh Hashanah is only 16 amas wide? We'll get to
that.
Because you have 10 from one step from one and 10 from the other, because the wagons are going side by side.
Yeah.
In fact, many Rishonim bring something that Rav Chaim Goren explains. He has a different explanation of the layout of it. He says that what it has is they had each pair of wagons attached together with a long piece of wood. And then you have the kroshim. According to them, the kroshim are not sticking out on each side of the wagon. They're going from the outer edge of one wagon to the outer edge of the other one, and the space between them. They're covering up the space between the wagons, and you have that space is held together with boards that go from one wagon to another.
They traveled evenly together.
So they traveled evenly together. They were like tandem. Yeah, like tandem wagons, right?
Now that, which means the question now that means that between the wagons should also be enough.
So that's when you say Benehem, that's what we're asking, that Benehem, that between them is Rosh Hashanah. But why? If Benehem is covered up with the boards. So again, we're answering. So we're answering so far that Rav is talking about the space. You're right. The space that's underneath the boards would not, in fact, be a Rishus Rabim because it's covered up. But the area between the rows of boards, as we're going to get to, that they were stacked up on. They were stacked up on the wagons between one stack and the next. There was a space. That would be Rishus Rabim.
Again, where's the space again?
Space between one stack and the next. You'd have a stack of two or three or whatever, as we're going to get to, of boards on one part of the wagon. Then you'd have a space, then another stack, then a space, then another stack, et cetera.
So each wagon had the one set of boards, and it being 10.
Altogether, you had 48 boards just of the Mishkan itself. You only have four wagons. So each wagon has to carry 12 boards. So...
Don't you say that Rishus Harabim has to be at least 18 amos,
16,
and that's much less between two wagons?
16. We're going to get to that tomorrow, why it is that on the face of it, we have more than 16 that we're working with over here. We'll get to that tomorrow, Beth Hashem. But, yeah, anyway, the point, we need to get a move on it, though. But, yeah, the point is that, so in other words, each board, so if you have, let's say, this is one of the wagons. So you have each board is like this. It's on the wagon. The ends of it are sticking out over one side of the seat. Yeah, and then you have one stack like this, and then you have a space, and then another stack. Yeah, not Tosfos learns it was like a segel. Actually, we'll get to Tosfos in a second. According to Rashi, you have a vertical stack. You have a vertical stack of boards, one, two, however many. Then you have a space. Then you have another stack. Further down the next part of the wagon, you have a space between.
Why not that?
Yeah. You don't have 18 amos between these two spaces. In any case,
no. What we're 18? First of all, 16 amos. But second of all, we're talking
16
about
amos.
16 amos. We're learning from the lengths of the boards, which are along the widths of the of the wagons, and each board is 10 amos long. And if you have two such wagons like that traveling one next to the other, then you end up with 20 amos. So we'll get to that point soon. We'll get to that point later. Why we're saying Rosh Hashanah is 16 amos, if in fact you have 20 amos on the face of it. But we'll get to that point later. Again, if one's the garden, and you have a different way of understanding it also, because they learn that they're not sticking out on either side of the wagons, just that the 10 amos are going from one wagon to the other. The two wagons are attached together, with a board or something with a piece of wood that holds them together, and you have two of them are traveling in tandem. So then it would be that you have a total of 10 amos width, and then we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow where we get the rest of the amos. Okay. Anyway, Tosfos has a whole different explanation. The Girsa is not the Darosa, which means, as Rashi says, the space between the stacks, but rather the Darosata, meaning the lowest row, meaning when you start stacking up the boards on them, because the wagons, as we're going to say later, don't have bottoms. So therefore, when you're stacking up the first row, that area is still Rosh Hashanah. After you put the first set of boards on the wagon, then at that point, now it's covered up. Fine, then it's not Rosh Hashanah anymore.
While we're traveling,
So the question is, Mechli, let's consider if this works out. Urkada Agola Kama Havoy, how long was each Agola? Chomish Amin, each one was 5 Amis wide. Pusya Dekeresh Kama Havoy Amso Palga, the... So now we're going to be focusing. Before we were focusing on the width of the wagons between one set of wheels and the other. Now let's focus on the length of the wagons. We're saying the wagons were 5 amos long as well as 5 amos wide. So let's see on a length of 5 amos, how many stacks of krushim are you able to make? So Mechli, let's consider. How long was each agola? Chomish amin, 5 amos, like the width. What was the width of each keresh? Was, we said, an amma and a half? Because, for example, on the north and south sides of the Mishkan, it says there were 20 krushim, and they made up a total of 30 ammas. So that's each one is an amma and a half wide. And the Gemara is starting with the assumption that they put them on the wide side, because in general, when you're stacking up things, you usually want to put them on the widest side possible so they're stable. So therefore, kama moisiv, so how many stacks are you able to put up? Plus, the maximum you're able to put is 3, because 1.5 times 3 is 4.5, and you only have 5 amos to work with. So what happens? Partial of palgadamsa, all you have left along the length of the wagon is a half an amma. And if you put that, if you distribute that evenly among the stacks, again, if we assume that there were three stacks, you have one stack over at one end of the wagon, one at the other end, and one in the middle, then you have between one stack and the next, you have only a half an amma of space, which is three tefachim, and that means between one stack and the next, you have a tefach and a half, and between the second and the third, you also have a tefach and a half, so lovum. So now at this point, it's like lovud. How can you say that the open space between the stacks should be considered Rishos Rabim? It's not wide enough to be considered anything.
You say lovud even sideways?
Yes. We said yesterday, we say lovud in all cases. Sideways, on the top, on the bottom, yeah. So how does that work? The Gemara says, "Me sabret kroshim aputai you have a manachlohu." You think that they put the kroshim, laid them down on the wagons on the wide side, on the amma and a half side? No, achudan manachlohu. They actually put them sideways on their thinner end, which is one amma, on their thickness, which is one amma. So you have more stacks that you can make. Now, by the way, Rashi explains the Gemara is always assuming that instead of making taller stacks, they would make as many stacks as possible. The Gemara didn't say, okay, well, the simple answer is instead of making three stacks, they only made two stacks of six boards each, let's say, or 12 boards each or whatever, and then they have a lot of space between them. The Gemara doesn't want to assume that because it wouldn't be stable. You make a tall stack like that, it's going to fall down. So therefore, the Gemara prefers to assume that, for example, if we have 12 boards per wagon, let's say, we're going to have three stacks of four stacks of three or whatever, have it distributed as much as possible in order to keep it from falling.
They stack them on the thinner side as they come out. If they stacked it on the thicker side, they would droop down a little bit more. And that might be why they stacked it.
Could be. I don't know. All right. So therefore, achudan manachlu, they're putting them on their thinner side, so therefore you have more room for more stacks, because you have five amas, if you have each board is an amma wide. Now granted, that doesn't mean that you can make five stacks one next to the other. First of all, Rashi explains you can't fit five inside five exactly, because, you know, you have, in order to fit one thing inside the other has to be slightly larger. More to the point, also, there were the tabois, there were the rings that stuck out. If you look on Amud Beis at the diagram of the Kedesh over there, you can see that there's a ring closer to the top of the Kedesh and a ring closer to the bottom of it, and those stuck out. You can't put five crushes in one next to the other.
We talked about this in a sikha about how close they put it together.
Yes, we'll get to that point in a minute. Good. Okay. So therefore, but they could still make four stacks. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, let's figure it out then. Sumcha de Kedesh Tamahabi, how wide was the thickness of the Kedesh? Was Amsa, was one Amma, Kamahaba Moisiv Abba, what's the maximum number of stacks of crushing then that they can make on each wagon is four? Because again, they can't make five because you can't fit five Amas exactly in five Amas. They were made very, very exactly. And also they have the rings sticking out, so that reduces the space available also. So you have four. Again, Poshala Amsa. So fine, you still have one Amma left. And if you, again, distribute that evenly between the stacks, because if you have four piles of krushim, each one three krushim high, if you have one keresh, then another one on top of it, and then another one directly on top of that, and you repeat that three more times. So now you have one, you have that, that's, you've taken up four out of the five amas length, you have one amma left. One amma is six tefachim. Divide that among three spaces. Each space is only two tefachim. Still lovud.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is, and the Gemara continues. Hanicha l'manda amma kroshim milamatan oivyan amma milamaylan kolin v'hochan ad kekva. Now, that would work according to the opinion, which we're going to learn on Amud Beis, that the kroshim were only one amma wide at the bottom, and then they narrowed to only an espa on the top. So each keresh, according to that, was, if you were to look at the keresh from the side, it would look like a triangle. The inner edge of it would be exactly vertical, so that you have a straight wall inside the Mishkan. But according to that opinion, the outer edge sloped in and went from an amma at the bottom to an espa at the top.
So it looks like a porcupine on the outside.
No, not how do you figure? No. Well,
spikes come on the outside.
No, we're not talking about spikes. No, then you misunderstand.
Trying.
What we have is each carrot looks kind of like this.
Uh-huh.
So each Kedush looks kind of like this. So when you put up a bunch of Kedushim next to the other, if you look at the outer wall of the Mishkan, you're going to see a slope that's sloping up towards the top.
The inside is straight, but
the inside is straight, but the outside is sloped. That's one opinion.
Well, you mean as they're going up?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, getting thinner and thinner.
On the bottom,
it was an amma wide, an amma wide, and then the top was espa wide, right? So it narrowed as in yeah. So it looks, well, you could, I mean, you have the waters and exactly. But like, if you think like, for example, of the shape of a doorstop and you scale it up, then that would be the idea of like one of those wedge-shaped doorstops that they stick under a door, and you scale that up, that would be what it looks like.
They must have got a lot of practice
in probably. All right, let's go on. Let's go on. We have ground to cover over here. Okay, so if you say that each board narrowed as it went up, well then, chapter, then it works out what Rab is saying, that the area underneath the wagons is still Rishus Rabim, because once you get to the narrow end, then you have spaces, you have large spaces between one Kerish and the next. Because if you have, if they're stacked up one pile of Kerushin, another pile, which is only at the beginning two Tvachim away, and another one, but as you go towards the narrow end of the Kerushin, the space opens up more and more, and eventually you get the space is more than three Tvachim, and you don't have Lavud, and therefore you can say that area, if you were to be standing under the wagon there and carrying something, then you'd be higher for carrying an Rishus Rabim.
That's how they were. You can't stack it, very hard to stack it, and then one side.
So it would mean they'd have to have maybe more of them would stick out on one side of the wagon than the other. Why didn't they do that? Tosfos discusses that. We'll get to that point in 1 second.
Oh, and that's why they put it on the side.
Because otherwise it would slide off. Could be. Okay. But if you say, according to the opinion on Amar Bay, that the Kerushim were one Amar wide the whole way up, then how does it work? Because then again, you have from beginning to end of the Kerush, you only have two Tvachim between one stack of Kerushim and the next one, and that's Lovewood, so it's like Lovewood, so the area underneath them would still not be considered Rishus Rabim. The answer is, Amar Kahana Ba'afdi. The answer is that we have to deal, we're talking about the area of the Afdi. Now, what is Afdi? There's a lot of different explanations. Mm-hmm. Rashi first brings from Ezra-Beim that Afdi is, Maloshim Taboyt, means the rings. So what we have is like this, Rashi explains. Given that you have the rings on the Kerushim, and given again we're saying that they're stacking up the Kerushim on their narrow, along their narrow sides. So therefore the rings are going to stick out towards the side. In the Hava, I mean, we thought that they were stacking them with the wide side down. In that case, the rings would either be sticking up or down, but if we turn them sideways, if we turn them 90 degrees, then the rings are sticking out either, are sticking out to one side or to the other. Yeah. So now what happens is like this. Because the rings are there, what you do is, Rashi describes, the stacks are not evenly arranged along the length of the Agola. Instead, what you do is you have one stack of boards at the end of the Agola with the rings pointing outward. Next to it, exactly next to it, you put another stack with the rings facing in the other direction. So the next stack are turned 180 degrees compared to the first one, and their rings point in the other direction. Then you have that. Then you have at the other end of the wagon, you have the same kind of thing. And you have a space in between. So therefore, of one amma, because if we have...
How many ammas are talking in an amma?
Six. Because there are six talking in an amma.
Four, because it was two.
No. What's the one talking? Hold on. Listen. What we're saying is like this. You have one set of crushing, which is one amma wide, which is one amma thick, where you have one pile of them, three crushing high at one end, with the rings sticking out towards the back of the wagon. Next to them, you have another stack of three with the rings facing in the other direction towards the front of the wagon. Those two are back-to-back. Those two together take up two amas. Then you have, at the other end of the wagon, you have the same thing, another two amas taken up by two piles of boards. And you have an amma space between them. Some of that amma space is filled in by, you have the rings that are sticking out into that amma space. Fine, but you still have most of an amma there, and an amma is more than lovewood, and there you go. So you have the area under the wagon can still be Rishus Rabim.
What you're saying now is that they weren't laying flat; they were only standing up.
No, they weren't standing up. They were laying flat. But what we thought is that they had a pile. They had a pile here, a pile here, a pile here, with small spaces between them. Now instead, we're saying it's like they have one big pile over here, consisting of two piles, one next to the other, two over here, also with one next to the other, and a big space in between, rather than the spaces being distributed evenly between them.
Even though there's a piece of wood attaching them.
There's no, according to the Gaonim, there's pieces of wood attaching the two wagons. We're not talking about that. According to the Gaonim, we're talking about, in other words, if he was one wagon and he was the other, then you have a piece of wood attaching them. Never mind that. We're dealing right now with Rashi, where each wagon was separate. Each wagon was separate, but you had, on the wagon itself, you have, here's the five amas. So we thought originally you have one stack over here, a space, another stack over here, a space. Remember, when we say over here, we mean like this, because it's hanging out over the sides as well. So we thought originally we have a stack like this going across and hanging over, a space of two tefachim, another stack, space of two tefachim, etc. Now we're saying, no, you have a stack and another stack right next to it without any space between them. Then you have a big space in the middle, and then the same thing on the other side. No, it's on the same wagon itself.
Oh, wow.
On the same wagon itself. You have a one amma space between the two stacks over here and the two stacks over here. Each keresh is 1.5 amas wide and 1 amma thick. So what we're doing is we're laying them on the 1 amma thick side. Okay. Fine. So give me the other one then. Good. Okay. So if we imagine that these are the crushing, we have a wide side and we have a narrower side. So what we do is we're stacking them on the narrower side, one on top of the other. And what we're doing is, instead of, we thought we have one stack here, then a space, then another stack, then a space, then another stack. Instead, what we're doing is one stack is right next to the other with the wings facing opposite direction, then a space, and then another two stacks on the other side of that space on the same wagon. So there's an amma between one stack and the next, and therefore that amma can be considered a shesarabim. Now, Tosfos points out what you were asking, Ellie, that in that case, according to the opinion that the crushim narrowed towards the top, so why don't they lay them alternately, one with the narrow end in this direction and one with the narrow end in that direction? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. First of all, it would be a gnai. You have the side that's up towards the areas should be next to another one that's on the ground when the Mishkan is standing. It wouldn't be respectful. Also, Tosfos says another answer. It's just when they took them down from the Mishkan, they loaded them up onto the wagons immediately. They don't want to be turning them this way and that. They don't want to be flipping them. They don't want to be flipping them that the narrow end of one is going to be facing in the opposite direction of the narrow end of the other. It would be too much of a hassle. Like this, you get it from the Mishkan, you lay it down on the, you take it and you lay it down rather than trying to turn it around like that.
Either way, to see, when they loaded the other side of the other wagons, they have to walk through one to the other.
No, so they passed it over one wagon to the other. That's what we said in the mission. That's why Moshe, we said, is chai. That's why handing something from one wagon or one porch to the other is chai. Anyway, then Tosfos gives a third answer, which is, even according to the opinion that they narrowed towards the top, maybe they didn't narrow evenly from the bottom to the top like a wedge, like I was saying before, but rather they were wide most of the way up, and then they started narrowing as they were getting towards the top. So it came out looking more like a so you can picture it then, in other words. So you had it like this, and then it narrows, and then it narrows, and then it only towards the top. So then in that case,
it doesn't
say, but well, we're going to learn on Omid Beis where Reb Nechemya learned that from. But wait, okay, fine. Okay, so anyway, so that's Rashi. I know. Okay. So anyway, so that's Rashi's Rebbeim's explanation of the Afi. Rashi himself explains that Afi means, and Afba means a paperclip, or means something like a paperclip. In those days, the way they made a paperclip was they would take a piece of wood and make a split in it, and they would use it to hold papers together. It looks sort of like a clothespin. So therefore, Rashi learns the Afi. The arrangement comes out similar to what his Rebbeim are saying, but we arrive at that explanation in a different way. They had each stack of boards was next to the other, so it was like a paperclip. So you have two of them next to the other. So from the top, if you were looking at it, you had like it was like one big piece with a split down the middle, and the same thing at the other side. So again, it comes out, there's an amma space between the two piles, and therefore that amma space would be Rosh Hashanah. Tosfos has yet another explanation that Afi means rails, That means they had the agolas had rails on them to keep the crushing from falling off. And therefore, what we're saying is, when they only put on the rails before they started putting on the boards, then it's Rosh Hashanah. On the front and back, Mishama, yeah. To keep the crushing from falling off. So they put them before they start putting the crushing. So at that point the area around the agolos is still Rosh Hashanah because it's not covered up yet. Once they start putting the crushing, they put down the bottom stack of them, and you still have spaces between the stacks. But then Tosfos learns, like you were saying, Aaron, that afterwards they make them more like a pyramid sort of. They have ones further up are in the spaces between the other ones, and inevitably it's going to be that way because you're not going to be able to stack them exactly up. It's going to slide over a little bit. So therefore, in the end, the whole wagon was covered, and it's not Rosh Hashanah. The area underneath it is not Rosh Hashanah, but until that happens, it is. So the question is, where exactly are we putting these afbi, the rings or whatever, agaba da agola, we're putting them on the top of the wagon, agola go from a koda abi, havoi. Okay, but the wagon itself was covered, the potash actually calls them, egos sov, which means covered wagon. The answer is, omashmur bi stavos. The answer is, and now, the assumption of the Gemara is, again, that the wagons themselves had a floor, the wagon themselves had an actual floor, as Rashi says, like the kind of wagon that you would use to transport sand or something. So in that case, how can the area under the wagon be Rosh Hashanah if it's covered up by the floor of the wagon? And the answer is, Amar Shmuel b'Yisaydus. The answer is that Shmuel says the bottom of the wagon did not consist of solid boards. It consisted of a board here, a peg here, or whatever, a peg there, with spaces between them, like, again, as Rashi says, like the kind that you use for transporting wood, where you don't need a solid bottom because the wood's not going to, it's too long to fall out anyway. Right. So then, in that case, when before they start loading up the wagons, they do in fact have the area underneath them is open to the sky. And even after they load up the crushim on them, they still have a space between one pair of piles of crushim and the other. And that space would be Rosh Hashanah.
Not between two stacks of
crushim on one end of the wagon and two stacks of crushim on the other end of the wagon. You know what? Yeah, so bring over the Gemara that you have, because it's got illustrations. And it's got illustrations. Chaval, the people on the phone are not going to be able to see these, but I guess here. What it is like this. Yeah, I can do that later. Okay. What we're saying in the end is like, we're saying originally we thought that the boards were stacked like this. So you only have a narrow space between one stack and the next. Each of these stacks, you have to imagine, has several boards, one on top of the other. We said that if they narrow, then for sure you have spaces. But otherwise, what we said is in the end, we're doing like this. You have, here's the wagon. At one end of the wagon, you have one stack of boards. Right next to it, you have another stack. The gray things are the stacks. Then you have a space. Then you have, at the other end of the wagon, two more stacks like that. So you have an amma space in between.
How much tefachim is an amma?
Six. So that's more than three tefachim. So it's not lovely. By the way, I said it wrongly before. I was saying that the wagons, thank you. I was saying the wagons were five by five ammas. Actually, no, they were five by two and a half ammas.
What?
The width of each wagon was two and a half ammas. And then once you include the wheels, then you have five ammas. And then you have the crushim sticking out beyond that.
You mean the actual frame of the
wagon itself was 2.5 amas wide, and you have a 10 amma long board along it. So you have the middle 2.5 amas of it are on the frame, and the other 7.5 amas are sticking out on the two sides. So actually, now you mentioned something about a sicha before. The Rebbe talks about in a sicha, the main focus in the sicha is why the Nesiim brought so few wagons. Why they bring only six wagons? If they knew there's a lot of crushim and a lot of materials in the Mishkan to carry, they should have brought more wagons. And we see from the Gemara over here that everything was very, very tight in space. They didn't have a lot of extra space to work with on the wagons. So why is that? And the Rebbe discusses the idea because from here we see that nothing is supposed to be wasted in avodah. If the wagon, the size that it is enough to carry the crushim, then it doesn't. That you don't want to waste space and have more space that is necessary that's not being used for that.
You're also overloading it, and you're putting a lot of extra weight on it.
You are, but that's that's fine. I mean, it's still, it would carry it. And we're actually going to have in the Gemara, tomorrow, Beis Hashem, that you had, you actually had to have a levy keeping an eye on things and making sure that nothing slides out of place and putting it back in place if necessary. But nevertheless, it did work that way, and therefore that was how they donated.
I guess that company did a good job smoothing out the way.
I guess there's that also. That's true. They were traveling on smooth road. Yeah. All right, let's go on. Now let's talk about, we said that there were two different opinions about the shape of the kroshim. So Tananabonim, kroshim milamata and ovian amma, the kroshim are 1 amma thick at the bottom, or milamailam kolon bahochan ad kespa, as they go up, they're narrowing to an espa, which we said, Tosfos says, again, one possibility is it means it was wide 1 amma most of the way up, and then it started narrowing from some point, or the other possibility is maybe they were narrowing smoothly like a wedge from the bottom to the top. Anyway, Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Yiyu Tamim Al Rosh, because the Pasuk describes the Kroshim that they should be Tamim at the top. Now, what does Tamim mean? O Lahal no Emma Tamu Nichrosu, Divir Rabbi Yehuda. Actually, I have the opinion backwards before I said Nechemia, I meant Rabbi Yehuda. But, so what it is like this. At the top it was narrow, at the bottom it was wide, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So what was it? Now, when the Jewish people crossed the Yarden, the Pasuk described that the water of the Yarden, tamu nichrosu, was stopped and cut off. So we see that the word tamu means to stop. So therefore, he says that means that the tamim al roshay therefore means that they stop. They narrow. They narrow towards the top. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Nechemia says no. The same shem alamata and ovin amma kach milamayon ovin amma. No, they're the same 1 amma fixed from the bottom to the top. Shenema yachdov, because the pasuk says together, implying that they should be all together the same. They should be the same size throughout. So the question is, v'achsiv tamim. Okay, what does Rabbi Nechemia do with the word tamim? The answer is ahud leisu shleimin v'lo leisu denistra. Fine, he says that means each keresh has to be made out of one solid piece of wood, not a bunch of pieces of wood that was sawn apart and then attached together. You don't have, each keresh has to be one piece of wood, not that they nailed or glued together different pieces of wood to make each keresh. Those are the famous trees that Yaakov planted in Mitzrayim, and the Jewish people took with them. Yeah. Okay, what about... But idach nami oksiv yachdav. Okay, what is Rabbi Huda doing with the word yachdav? He says, "Ahu deloy lishlochinu mahadavi." That means that you want to have that when the boards are put up to make the mishkan, you want to have that all of them are exactly next to each other. You shouldn't have that some of them are offset. You shouldn't have some of them are sticking. You shouldn't have that some of them are sticking more in and some of them are sticking more out like that. You want to have that they make a solid surface. So on the inside, that solid surface is going to be exactly vertical, and on the outside, that solid surface is going to be sloped. But either way, it'll be solid, and it'll be one next to the other. Okay. So the Gemara says, "B'shleim l'manda amma k'shem shel matan ovyan amma kach milamayon ovyan amma." If we say that they were one amma wide the whole way up, then Hainu Dechtiv, then we have like this. What happens when it comes to the west side of the Mishkan? So the Pasuk describes like this. Mishkan Kroshim. Yet at the bottom, for the western side, for the back wall of the Mishkan, you should make 6 Kroshim, 6 regular Kroshim, which so far makes up 9 Amos. And then the Pasuk continues. Then it says you should make 2 more Kroshim for the corners. So those kroshim are going to be the same size as the other one, one amma by 1.5 ammas. So when you put, so like this, you put one of them on each side. There's 20 kroshim going along the north and 20 kroshim going along the south. Then you have 6 kroshim in the west. You have 1 amma that you still need to fill in. So you have 2 kroshim in the corners over there. Each one fills up 1/2 an amma over there. And therefore you have, this is what we're talking about on the inside. On the outside, what it is, the inside surface, the inside area of the Mishkan was 10 by 30 amas. The outside would have been 12 by 31 because you have two rows of kroshim on the outside and one along the back wall. So therefore, so you have 2 kroshim in the corners. Each one is 1 amma by 1.5 amas. 1.5 amas together makes 3. Two times 1.5 makes 3. So there's your 12 amas. And when you look from the inside of the Mishkan, what you would see is if you're looking along the back wall, you would see 6 whole kroshim, and then you would see part of each of the kroshim on the corners. that are filling in the space of an Ed. So that works out. El Lamanda Omar, so that the Osi Pusya Dahani Mamalala Sumka Dahani. So therefore the width of one exactly fills up the area that was left over by the thickness of one fills up the space that was left by the width of the other one. And therefore you come out with an exact corner.
On the outside you see the full.
On the outside it looks exact. On the outside, of course,
full,
you would see everything.
Full, full,
yeah, of course. But on the inside, you would see, on the western side, on the back wall, you would see only part of those corner boards, right? So that works out. But if you say that each of the kerushim narrowed towards the top, so what are they doing in the corners over there? High oil behind nothing. Then you have, when you have two walls that are meeting, you're going to have an offset over there. And the answer is, the shofi lahu kiturin. What they actually did with the corner boards, the corners of Rabbi Yehuda, is they made them come to a point. Turin literally means mountain. So it means it came to a point like a mountain. So in other words, all the other kroshim had a vertical edge on the inside and a sloped edge on the outside. The ones in the corners were sloped on both sides in order to come to a point on the top, and that way it'll exactly fill in the space.
The ones on the west side were made differently.
No, most of the ones on the west side were made exactly the same. The two corner ones were made differently in order to exactly fill up the corner. So you would have like this. So in other words, they slope in both directions. They slope from one direction and from the other in order to exactly fill up the space.
This is the corner. So one of it's going to be sloping over here, and one of them, so it's got to slope on both of these. So it's going to be like in the top, like
triangle. Yeah, pretty much. It's going to be, yeah.
The corner will be exact.
So when you look at the corner over there, you will see a smooth corner over there. You'll have a slope here and a slope there that meet exactly at that special shape piece. Yeah. Okay. Now let's talk more about the construction of the Mishkan. The pasuk says the middle bar that went through the Kerushim. So implies on the inside. Now, what it is like this. If you look on the diagram at the bottom, if you look at the diagram further down over here, you have, again, each teresh has, near the top, has a ring, and near the bottom it has a ring. And through those rings, they would pass brichim. They would put long sticks that would hold the boards together. Because otherwise, the problem is like this. Each teresh is 10 amas high. You have the Adonim holding them at the bottom, but the Adonim are only an amma high. So it's not going to be stable. It's going to move back and forth. The tops are going to move back and forth. So instead, they had the brichim to hold them together. They had these bars to hold them together. So you had bars near the top that went through each keresh had a ring, and it went through all the rings. And the same thing at the bottom. And then you had in the middle, you had a bria hatichon, which the Gemara is learning. The bria hatichon was they drilled a hole through the middle of each keresh, and then they pass the bria hatichon through those holes. That it happened with a nest that it would turn the corners, because in Bedeh HaFeva, you're not going to have something that can go like that all through all the boards like that. Rashi on the pasuk actually learns differently, that it wasn't necessarily Bedeh HaYomid, that because all you had is, in other words, there was one bria hatichon for each side. There's one for the north, one for the west, one for the south, and it didn't have to turn. Okay, but Rav Gemara is assuming that it was one bria hatichon.
Well,
so all of that. Yeah.
What was the bria hatichon made of?
Wood, like all the other ones. Okay. Now we talked about the boards of the Mishkan and how they were set up. Now let's talk about how the curtains of the Mishkan fit together with that. The Pasuk says that a Mishkan kafta esiriyos. The Pasuk says the Mishkan is you cover up the Mishkan with 10 curtains. These are the curtains made of tchelas ba'agaman, v'tchelas shani, etc. And the Pasuk says you had each yuriyah was 28 amas long and 4 amas wide. So let's figure out how it works. You take the length of each of the yuriyahs and spread it across so it goes along the width of the Mishkan and then hangs down on the sides. Once they set up the framework of the Mishkan, then they would put the yuriyahs over it. So now, it goes on the top and it hangs down to the side. So you have 28, so you have 28 amas to work with. Gal Esther the Igra, so subtract 10 for the roof, because again, the inside area of the Mishkan was 10 amos by 30 amos. Tosfos says we actually don't have in the Pasuk where it actually says in so many words that it was 10 amos. However, for one thing, in the Bais Mikdash we find that the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim together were 60 by 20, so a proportion of 1 to 3, so it must have been the same way in the Mishkan as well. If we know from the Pesukim that the length, that the inside length of the Mishkan was 30 amos, then the width must have been 10 amos. So you have 10 amos for to cover the roof of the Mishkan. Partial or Tesla high gisa to Tesla high gisa. So now you have 9 for each side. Now remember, we have the two different opinions how the Kroshim are shaped. Lir of Yehuda, so according to Rav Yehuda, who says that the Kroshim come to only an Esra on the top and they slope as they go down to the bottom. So therefore, it comes according to him that you have almost the whole 9 Amos on each side available to hang down, because none of it is covering the tops, very little of it is covering the tops of the Kroshim. All you have is an Esra on each side, which is a very tiny amount. So therefore, according to him, 9 amos hung down on each side. It covered the entire length of the keresh down to the adonim. The bottom amma of each keresh was inside the adonim, inside the silver adonim over there. So the adonim are uncovered, but the rest of the length of the keresh is covered by these ureas. And according to Rav Nechemia, the bottom amma of the kroshim themselves is also uncovered at that point. According to him, you have, because again, according to him, you have 10 for the inner area of the Mishkan, one more on each side to cover the thickness of the kroshim, because they're an amma thick, according to him, on each side. So far, you're up to 12. You have 28 to work with, means you have 8 on each side. 12 plus 8 plus 8 is 28.
So
and if
it's not 12. Then it doesn't go down all the way.
Then it doesn't go all the way down. Then you have the bottom amma of the kroshim and the amma of the adonim all left uncovered.
So if you have a picture and it is not sloped and it also goes all the way down, then
that's we're talking about the so far we're only talking about the inner layer of ureus. Then it's the next layer we're going to get to. Wait. Okay.
The little second diagram.
Well, that's also true, but yeah. Okay. Fine. So that's that. Next, Shodi Pusayu L'Urka de Mishkan. Next, let's talk about the width of these curtains. Each curtain was 4 amos wide. They had 10 curtains because they had a group of 5 that was sewn together, another group of 5 that was sewn together, and then they held them together with the crossim and the lulois, so the loops and the hooks over there. So you have a total of 40 amos to work with. You have 40 amos because 10 curtains are 4 amos each. Gal Tlosin Legra, 30 of them go to cover the roof of the Mishkan, because again, the inside area of the Mishkan is 30 amos long. Partial of Yud, so you have left 10. Little of Yehuda Mechasya Amad Adonim. So according to Yehuda, in the back of the Mishkan, the Adonim are covered also, because you have full 10 amos. Okay, 10 amos minus an Esra, whatever, we're not counting as boys over here. We're talking in terms of amos. But the Adonim on that side are covered as well, because you have full 10 amos available to hang down. On the back wall. This is on the
west.
No, only on the west. On the east it was open. That was where the opening of the Mishkan was. So it's not hanging over the east at all. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, mechas the amma d'adonim, the amma of the adonim there is also covered on the west side. Lord of Nechemia, megal the amma d'adonim, and according to Rabbi Nechemia, one amma of the adonim, the amma of the adonim is still uncovered on that side because he needs one amma to cover the actual thickness of the kroshim on that side. Okay. Next comes the next layer. Then we continue that you make curtains made out of goat hair for the next layer of the Mishkan. Each uriah is 30 amos long, and then they're also 4 amos wide. So let's figure the same thing. Shodi ukayu l'putti the Mishkan. 30 amos, you put the 30 amos length along the width of the Mishkan, so it hangs down over the side. So you have 30 amos. Gal esel igra, again, 10 goes to cover the actual inner area of the Mishkan. Partial who esel haigisa the esel haigisa. So you have 10 amos available to hang down. You have 10 amos available on each side. Now, how much of that hung down versus how much of that covered the kroshim, that's what we have to figure out. Little Yehuda mechafya amada adonim, according to the Yehuda, that the kroshim narrowed towards the top. So it means you have the full 10 amos, or almost the full 10 amos, minus a couple of atzvos, goes to cover the entire length of the kroshim, including the adonim. So according to the ureus, you're saying when you have pictures that show the ureus covering the adonim, that would be according to the Yehuda with the ureus ism. They covered even the adonim on the north and south side of the Mishkan, because he has full 10 amos to work with. According to the Yehuda, the one Amma of the Adonim is uncovered on the north and south sides, on the long sides of the Mishkan. Because again, according to him, you have of the 10 Ammas we have on each side, one of them goes to cover the top edge of the Keresh, and the other nine hang down. And since each Keresh is 10 Ammas tall, and the bottom Amma of the Keresh is inside the Eden, inside the Adonim, then you only have nine. So it went exactly to the bottom. It went to where the Adonim begin. The Adonim themselves, the one Amma tall. Here we have again some diagrams. Thank you. According to the Yehuda, what we're saying is you have nine Amas hanging down of the first set and 10 Amas hanging down of the second set. So the first set covers the board but not the Adonim, as you can see over there. And the second one covers the board with the Adonim, you can see there. And according to the Nehemiah, the bottom one, the first one covers until one Amma above the Adonim, and the second one covers until exactly the beginning of the Adonim.
Yeah.
That's how, depending on how tall and how wide, top, by the way, an S for an Amma, right? Tani Nami Hochi, in fact, the Gemara says we learn like that in the Braisa. The Pasuk says, V'ha'ama mizeh, v'ha'ama mizeh v'odeh. It says there's an Amma extra on each side because the Urias is of 30 as compared to 24, as compared to 28 for the previous one. So you have an Amma extra on each side. V'odeh, that's extra. It means v'chatas Amma shal Adonim divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that extra Amma goes to cover the Adonim. And Rabbi Nechemiah emel l'chatas Amma shal Kroshim. And Rabbi Nechemiah says it comes to cover one extra Amma of the Kroshim that was left uncovered. Okay. Next, Shodi Kusayu La'ukad Mishkan. Then what we do is we take the width of the Yeriasism. There were 11 Yeriasism, so we have 44 Amas to work with, and we put that along the length of the Mishkan. Kamahav, remember, we have 44 Amas to work with. Dal Tzlos in the Igra, 30 of it goes to cover the inner surface of the Mishkan. Poshalu Arbastre, you have left 14. Dal Tauti Vakafla, subtract another two Amas which hung over the front, because unlike with the first Yerias, which started at the beginning of the Mishkan, here you had two, the Pasuk says, V'chafalta Asa Yerias Shishis, that part of the sixth Yerias should hang over the front. There were two layers so far we're talking about. The third layer was the Urus Toshim and the Urus Edom Adam, and we're not getting into that right now. So you take two Amas of the first curtain and have it hang over the entrance so that the top two Amas of the entrance are covered. Then you start going from there. As the Pasuk says, you should fold over the six sheets onto the front of the Mishkan. Here they're really only showing the back of the Mishkan. They're not showing a good illustration over here of what the front would have looked like according to that. They're not showing good illustration of you over here of what the front would have looked like. But you have one half of one curtain is hanging over the front. No, they're not. But you have so two Amas are hanging over the front. Then you have another 30 Amas covering the inside. So for you up to 32. Partial who tauti straight, you have left 12. So what happens with those 12? If the Mishkan is only 10 Amas tall, it means that two Amas are dragging on the ground. So Bishleim a little, and according to the Yehuda, so. So according to the Yehuda, we understand that's what it means. The extra half curtain will be extra and will hang and will actually drag on the ground. Because according to him, that's what you have. You have 32 Amas. You have two Amas hanging over the front, 30 Amas going along the length. Then you have the tops of the Kerushim are narrow, according to him. So we don't count that. All you have is an S over there. You have 12 Amas. 10 of it covers the full length of the Mishkan. And two more Amas, which is half of the thickness of one Uriah, drags on the ground. But according to the Nehemiah, what do you mean Tisrach? You don't have a half a sheet on the ground. You only have one Amma on the ground, according to him. The answer is Tisrach. He says it means that it's just it's longer than the other ones. It just means the other ones are 40 Ammas, and these are 44 Ammas. And it sticks out a little more. But according to him, it only sticks out one Amma extra. One Amma extra that's dragging on the ground. In that case, what does the Mishkan look like if you have part of the Urias that's dragging on the ground? You have like a woman walks in the street and her dress is dragging, her train is dragging on the ground behind her. So the same way the Mishkan had part of it dragging on the ground. Rashi on the Pesukim actually mentions yet a different way of understanding it, that more of it was hanging over the front, and there was nothing hanging on the ground. And in fact, there's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about Rashi on the Pesukim may have preferred that way of understanding it, because why should we assume that any of it was dragging on the ground? It's not, you want to have chos al yofer, you want to have that you don't want things to get ruined. If part of it, if one or two amos of it is lying on the ground there all the time when they're camped, then that's not going to deteriorate.
They have to knock it in.
They can attach ropes to the ends of it and have them go into pegs that go in the ground. They don't need to actually have the actual fabric itself lying on the ground. So that ever says that's why maybe Rashi preferred a different explanation from Bryce to the Malachas and Mishkan that lays out the curtains a little differently, and that way nothing of it needs to be on the ground.
So the bottom
of it would be exactly to the bottom of the Mishkan, but not according to that, but not hanging any lower. The Rebbe also talks about the Pnimius Binyanim. Why would all Gemara be saying?
The extra part would be hanging in the front.
Yeah, there would be more hanging down in the front, and therefore less hanging in the back. Right. The Rebbe also talks about the finish the sicha over there. That the Pnimius Binyanim. The idea is, according to all Gemara, that some of it, according to either of Nehuda or of Nehemiah, some of it was actually lying on the ground. The deeper idea behind it is that the Urias Ism represent more the forces of Tumah in the world. Ism are associated with Esav and the Chatas and the Tzor La'Azazel and whatever, and therefore that you want to have some of it on the ground, so it's toil on the ground of the world as well, and not just on the Mishkan, which is above ground.
So,
trip to Shomikra, Rashi learned this. Yeah.
And four wagons?
Yeah. So each wagon has to hold 12 crushing, yeah. 12.
So yeah. Rows of three.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're saying, the Moscow, yeah. Okay.
So Sunday you want to make it.
So real quick, first of all, on Shabbat, the shiur will be at 5:30, Beis Hashem. And on Sunday, it'll be continuing as usual. Well, in theory, we could make it 15 minutes later, because I'm not sure if I want to do that, because people are liable to get confused between
them.
Okay, maybe, fine. So Sunday, fine. We're proposing that on Sunday, instead of 6:30, we're proposing that on Sunday we do 6:45. I'll put that on the group as well. All right. Okay, everyone, good Shabbat.